Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week, and I'm very happy about it, is Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey Roy is one bright guy. Welcome, Yancey.
Hey, thanks for having me, Alan.
Okay, so we got a lot to talk about. Let's talk about the Democratic campaign strategy. There's obviously an abortion issue in New York. Maybe you could talk about that.
Well, you know, what we did last weekend at Newsday, we ran a long piece about Democrats are just obviously got a strategy going forward to November, and that is to hammer Republicans on a couple of themes. One is abortion rights, and the other is Donald Trump slash the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. And, you know, whether it's from Kathy Hochul on down, whether it's congressional candidates, whether it's state legislative candidates, you can see the literature coming out from the Democratic Party feeling that this is a good strategy for them.
A winner.
And there is evidence. There is evidence, sure. Yeah. There was the referendum on abortion in Kansas, which is, of course, a pretty conservative state, where voters essentially voted for abortion rights. And then in our own upstate New York, there was the August 23rd special election in the Hudson Valley between Democrat Pat Ryan and Republican Marcus Molinaro. And Ryan really leaned heavily on the abortion issue in that campaign and won in a bit of a surprise, and afterwards said, yes, this is part of why we won, was that we pushed so hard on this message, because with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, it is an issue. And in fact, as you probably saw on the national level, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham now has proposed a nationwide ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. So him doing that this week is only going to keep that as an issue probably all the way through November.
But you don't see, Yancey Roy, any indication that abortion as a concept is anything but strong, the right to an abortion here in New York.
Well, there's a couple levels to that issue. One is, you know, New York has a law passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Cuomo a few years ago, then Governor Cuomo, which codified abortion rights in New York.
That's Cuomo the younger.
That's right. That's Andrew Cuomo. Sorry. So the one issue, would that law ever get repealed or overturned? Highly unlikely in New York State.
Right.
But there are some other issues that go into play about who is the chief executive in New York. Lee Zeldin is the Republican governor, Republican candidate for governor, and he has said the law won't change. But there's some there is some leeway in what the governor can do in office in regards to this issue. A governor could appoint a pro-life health commissioner, which Zeldin has said he's open to doing. The governor has a lot of advantages in the budget process of every year with the state legislature. Could a governor say, hey, I'm not going to sign the budget unless you cut out Medicaid funding for abortions? Or could I not sign the budget unless you appoint the guy I want to be the health commissioner? There's all sorts of other discretionary issues about grants, from the state grants to federal funding, and how will you use that? So I think that's an issue that has multiple levels. It's not just would anyone ever try to overturn the abortion rights law in New York State.
Well, what are the electoral ramifications of what you've just said?
In terms of how it plays out in the campaigns?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that what you're going to see is a struggle, and this is in broad strokes, from the Democrats versus the Republicans. You'll see Democrats talking about abortion. They're talking about Trump and January 6th. The insurrection at the Capitol, and you will see Republicans trying to push the conversation over to the economy, inflation, and crime. And, you know, each is going to tell the voters that this is what's on the ballot this year and try to convince them to see it their way. That's how it's going to sort of broadly play out for the next 2 months.
So now that you're talking about this, what do the polls say about the governor's race now?
Well, the most recent Emerson College poll says Hochul still maintaining a 15-point lead. That was kind of in keeping with what both Emerson and Siena said about a month earlier. So that's where it stands right now. You know, there's a couple of mileposts in this campaign. That one we've just passed, which is Labor Day, which is the traditional jump start of like, okay, really going to speed up. And then there's, frankly, there's, well, what we used to call Columbus Day, but about second week of October, where you got 4 weeks to go to Election Day. And that's where you're really going to see at, you know, TV blitz of ads and radio and online and everywhere. We're already seeing some of it. Kathy Hochul has gotten out early. She's got a large campaign war chest, and she started with a $2 million ad buy right after Labor Day, going right after Zeldin on the issues that we just talked about.
Very impressive, by the way. Very impressive ads, I thought.
They're playing everywhere, too, it seems. Zeldin is now out with his first TV ad. It's about crime rates. I think that, you know, like I say, as we move into October, it's just going to be more and more. That's when you're really going to see both campaigns really turn out the ads.
So could we talk about Zeldin for a moment? You know, you work for a Long Island newspaper, right? So what do the polls say about the governor's race, and how popular is Zeldin, who I heard was in trouble on Long Island, now that he's facing a different kind of election?
Well, let's take that apart a little bit. There was, you know, he's been elected on Long Island first to the state Senate and then to Congress in a district that is basically the east end of Long Island, Suffolk County, which tends to be the more conservative part of Long Island. And you know, he's won support. It's kind of a swing district in that congressional district, but he's steadily won each time. Now, you move over to talking about a statewide race. Well, that's a whole different kind of race, right? First of all, and probably one of the big things facing Zeldin is name recognition and do people know you? It's one thing to be well-known in your district. You know, every legislator is well-known probably in his district. But when you look at the statewide numbers, and I'm looking at the Siena poll right here, I mean, Zeldin's been campaigning for a year and a half, and in the last Siena poll, 41% of people said they don't know or didn't know enough about him to have an opinion of him. So that's the first big hurdle that you have to overcome. And how do you do that? Usually it's with campaign money. Now, Zeldin had raised a decent amount of money in the Republican primary, but he had to spend a lot of it to win that four-way primary back in June. After that primary, he was down to about $1.5 million. they say he's, you know, probably raised $1 million or so since then. We know that he recently had a fundraiser with the ex-president Donald Trump to help raise money for him, which is kind of a double-edged sword because
in New York
you need the money. In New York, yeah, you need the money to run. But Donald Trump is, you look at the polls there, he 2-1 unfavorable numbers in New York State. So do you continue to link with Trump, embrace Trump? You need the financial help. It's a little bit of a conundrum for a candidate. Now, how do Republicans respond to this? Well, Lee Zeldin and Nick Langworthy, the state chairman, say Trump's not on the ballot. He's not in office. He's not on the ballot. And that's not what people are going to make their decisions based on. But, you know, it's quite possible there will be some people who make their decision based on that. The question is how many and how much it affects it, the statewide race.
But the Republicans really don't have a shot here, do they?
You know, you never want to say never. It's a volatile time. You know, elections can turn. There can be something that happens in the news at the last minute. Hey, look, going into November 1st, people at 2016, people didn't think Donald Trump had a chance. And he won. I know there's a whole different type of election, but I'm using that as an example to say, be careful about saying someone has no chance.
Joining us this week, I just want to point out once again, is Yancey Roy, the phenomenal Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Okay, so right now, maybe it's just me, taking from our conversation, what I think I'm hearing is the Republicans don't have a strong shot in this gubernatorial election.
Well, there's some historical precedents against them. One is no Republican has won a statewide contest since 2002 when George Pataki ran for his last term. Two.
After having won twice before, of course, so that had some effect. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Right. And two, the circumstances are kind of different from 2002 in the sense of enrollments. You know, the Democrats now far outnumber Republicans more than 2-1 in the state. And in fact, Republicans are now are outnumbered by so-called blanks or independent voters, people who do not register with any party. And that's something that happened after the Trump tenure, which we wrote about and other people wrote about at the time. The number of blanks in New York State grew and now outnumber Republicans. Also, another thing that...
Let me stop you there. Yancey, you make such a good point. I want to stop you there. And that is, when somebody identifies themselves as, you know, not affiliated or in the middle, we know we can add up all those votes and find out what those people actually do when they get into the voting booth. Do you have any insights for us on that?
Well, you know, that's a good point. You could have been a Republican and maybe you changed to blank because you were unhappy over the last few years, but you still might vote for Republican candidates, right? It all depends on the race at the time. So you're wondering about maybe how will independent or blank voters break in the election. Mm-hmm. If you're a Republican, if you're the Republican candidate like Lee Zeldin, because Democrats so heavily outnumber Republicans in the state, you have to win the independent voters. You have to win them big. You probably have to win them by at least 15, 20 points. You can't just win it by five, right? And that also fluctuates on turnout. But what we saw in the last poll, again, not that polls can't change at all, but when you looked at independent numbers, would you vote for Kathy Hochul or Lee Zeldin? Zeldin has an edge, but it's only by 2 points. So, and Zeldin's probably not going to get a lot of Democratic voters on his side. So his target would have to be those independent voters. And like I said, you can't just win by 2 or 5 points if you want to win statewide. If you're the Republican, you got to win that pretty big, 15 or 20 points. So there's some hurdles there. But it doesn't mean that this is by any means over or locked up or anything like that.
We're talking to Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Okay, so let me ask you about this legislation that would require SUNY campuses to have polling sites where students could vote. You see this as having any impact on the elections? I should say that the producer of the show, David Gustina and Alan Chartok, your host here, are both college teachers and know that maybe it takes a bomb to get a student out of a seat to vote.
Well, this is something that the New York Public Interest Research Group, NYPIRG, and others have been pushing for years. The idea, broadly, is to get more people to vote, make it easier for people to vote, wherever, if it's in college or, you know, whatever the circumstance. And they say it would be easier to allow college students to do that. Now, Republicans in general have been against this in New York State. Among other reasons, it's sort of just the straight-up strategy calculus here, because you've got a lot of upstate communities with SUNY campuses. They upstate tends to be more conservative, but you know, SUNY students come from all over, whether it's at Albany or New Paltz or Binghamton or wherever. And so basically the general idea is that if you allow students to vote in, say, Binghamton, they're going to vote more on a more liberal scale than probably the local residents would. And so that's why especially the upstate Republicans have been against that idea. Now, you know, one of the questions beyond the sort of that argument is how much would students turn out in the election? There's always talk about, you know, the young vote and will it turn out? I think that's something that people still debate as to how much young voters will come out. Typically year after year, and you see this in studies from AARP and others, if there's any group that comes out kind of disproportionately compared to others, it's people who are 50 and older, not the younger voters.
Let's change subjects, Yancey Roy, to Governor Kathy Hochul, who said Monday she would not renew her emergency powers to manage the COVID-19 pandemic, noting availability of a new booster shot and coronavirus case numbers that are holding steady. The governor's emergency powers were put in place by former Governor Andrew M. Cuomo, remember him, in 2020 and renewed multiple times. Republicans have been criticizing the governor for keeping those powers. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, this has been something that Republicans and the legislature have been harping on for a long time, and even some Democrats, frankly, when Andrew Cuomo was the governor, was that we go back to the start of the pandemic and things were just breaking fast and it spread quickly. And Andrew Cuomo made the argument, and a lot of people agreed, that look, a governor is going to have to make quick decisions to spend money here, to put up a mass vaccination site there, a testing site over in this county, and we just can't do it all through the legislative process. And everyone agreed with that, and he held that power. But as the first year went by, there began to be more and more carping that, you know, the immediacy of decision-making wasn't there anymore, and that the governor needed to give up this power and return some of the more give and take to the legislature. Kathy Hochul, when she came in August, didn't give it up immediately. And I think that was because they were worried about December, January, the flu season, everything from last year. Would they have to like do a lot of test sites and vaccination sites, and where would they get test kits and where would they get vaccines? And so they needed the ability to act fast. We move into the summer. Again, there was more Republicans saying, give up the power. This is going on too long. She held on to it till the start of this school academic year in September. Again, the rationale there was, well, what if school starts and then all of a sudden we have a huge outbreak and we have to swing into action? But also that argument didn't cut it with a lot of state legislators, and saying that this was a way around things. This was a way to keep power in the governor's office, and this was a way to sometimes do things like expedite contracts without bidding, which maybe, you know, the governor shouldn't be doing. So there has been some real kickback, rather pushback, I should say, pushback from the Republicans about that issue. Does it resonate in the election? I don't know. It's definitely something that I think people in campaigns talk about. I don't know if it gets above the din of the other issues that we talked about previously, abortion, Trump, crime, inflation. Those tend to be like taking up most of the oxygen in the campaigns right now.
I want to talk to you, Yancey Roy, about two health issues, if I can. And we're running out of time here. We're down to the last 7 minutes or so. So let me ask you this. How about a lot of talk about the spread of polio in New York, one, and two, the monkeypox and COVID in the state? Both of those are significant health issues, and I wonder what people are saying.
Well, polio, which, you know, been gone for decades, came back. There was a case in Rockland County this summer, and since then, several communities have discovered it in their wastewater, which is, that's also something that's fascinating that came since coronavirus, was that government and health people being able to, you know, determine that something was in the community before there was anybody maybe tested positive. So now we've had it in New York City, and now we've had it on Long Island. So the governor has declared a health emergency regarding polio. And the issue here, but by the way, as far as I understand and everyone understands, if you got the vaccine way back when you were a kid, like probably the majority of people, then you don't need another vaccine right now. But they did declare another state of emergency regards to polio. And what the main thing that was to do was to, or I say one of the main things, was to expand the pool of people who can administer vaccines to the pharmacist and others, I believe, emergency health service workers, I should say, and midwives. So I think that was one of the main reasons why they wanted to make that declaration. Now, you know, beyond that, I don't, you know, in terms of testing, or everyone's kind of, I think, kind of sitting and waiting to see if there's more positive cases that come through. But as the health commissioner said in a recent press conference in declaring this emergency, she said, on polio, we simply cannot roll the dice. And it's encouraging people to not wait to act if they haven't gotten a vaccine, to hurry up and get a vaccine.
Now, your newspaper is Newsday, of course, and ex-Nassau County Executive Edward Mangano heading to prison after the appeals court denies his bail bid. This is not the first person from Long Island to go to prison. What happens when a politician gets caught and goes to prison?
Well, you know, this all basically stemmed around, and I'm generalizing here, but basically trading favors, right, for contractors, in this case a restaurateur, and getting treatment and money. It's an interesting thing in the sense that, you know, Ed Mangano was a, for folks upstate who might not know, he was a Nassau County politician who back in 2009 ran for county executive against Tom Suozzi. You remember that name. Suozzi was, you know, a powerful guy on Long Island. And Mangano won in what was kind of a stunning upset. And then he beat Suozzi again in 2013 in a rematch. So he was a big Republican hero in that sense. But in the end, his term being county executive, you know, arguably was a terrible thing for the way his life turned, rather, because a few years later, he's indicted. He's later convicted on all of these trading favors for money. And after a lot of appeals and trying to stay out of prison, and it looks like he is finally going to be headed to prison shortly. And it's an interesting rise and fall, all in the course of about 12 years for Edward Mangano.
Let's just talk about takeaways from the congressional and state Senate primaries that you wrote about. And you wrote that in a rare August primary, for which voter turnout was patchy, it had the potential to produce some surprises around New York State. Extreme right candidates were trying to take out party-backed Republicans. Did that work?
It really didn't, to a large extent, at least not in, you know, in the races that we were covering. You know, there was some far-right Trump candidates trying to win on Long Island. They were not successful. You know, there were some crypto-backed candidates. They did not win as well. It's also interesting that in some of the more high-profile Democratic primaries, the more moderate or mainstream Democrats won, and rather than the far-left socialist, whether that was in there was a couple of big races. One, congressional district number 3, Tom Suozzi's district on Long Island. There was a handful of candidates, and it was won by, on the Democratic side, it was won by Robert Zimmerman, who was arguably, in a five-way race, was probably one of the two most mainstream or moderate candidates there. And out on the far end of Long Island to replace Lee Zeldin, there were 3 candidates. Michelle Bond was a crypto exec who had a lot of money backing her, and people thought that might be an upset. She was a real Trump backer. And instead, the party-backed guy, Nick LaLota, won fairly easily. So it was interesting that, you know, at least in New York, unlike some other states that we see, you know, no, the far-right candidate in the primary did not win Republican primaries.
Okay, so all I can say is, Yancey, you are always a favorite of ours, and we keep coming back to you because nobody has his hand or finger on this, all of this, the way that you do, and we thank you for being with us. And we are out of time. Our guest has been Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, again, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at NYSUT.org.